Alright, so I will talk about the Higgs 2000 with HCP data. So, Higgs 2000 tau is the only channel. Somebody had a pointer, I guess. Okay. So, Higgs 2000 tau is the only handle we have to study Higgs couplings to leptons at the current luminosities. I assume Higgs 2 mu mu will come at some point, but I will have white hair by then. I'm pretty sure. So currently, Higgs 2 tau gives you a branching ratio of the order of 8% for a mass of 125 GeV. And it's also very important because it has enhanced branching ratio in the MSSN high tangent beta. And if you take also into account that the cross section also is enhanced, MSSM Higgs 2 tau is the most important MSSM Higgs analysis in the LHC. So experimentalists like it because it has many experimental changes. So the first is that it has huge contamination from Z to tau tau, which requires exploiting additional objects in the final state. For example, you add jets, you add diejet tags, you add additional vector bosons produced in association with the Higgs. And in the MSSM, you add B tags. And in that way, you can reduce the Z to tau tau background. And the second thing is that it requires improved di tau mass resolution to separate the two masses. And it's very hard to do that because you have between 2 and 4 neutrinos in the final state, the smeared mass distribution. And the second challenge is that the tau decays hadronically 64% of the time. Therefore, you need sophisticated tau ID to reject backgrounds from jets. And we do all that. So how we produce it in the standard model, the dominant production mechanism is gluon fusion. But as you can see, this one is very similar. If you had two quarks given a Z, so the background is huge, so you need to add something. So what you add is an additional jet, and that helps a little bit the situation because if you boost your tau, you get better resolution. Then we have the vector boson fusion, which was designed. When we designed the experiment, we were expecting to use that to do this analysis. So we use the diejet tag, which can give you about 10 to the fourth reduction of the Z. And there is also associated production, which you have an additional boson that suppresses Z. And you have the boson background, but the cross section is very small, especially after you take into account the tau branching ratios. But we are doing that. So in the MSSM, everybody knows this. We have two Higgs doublet, five Higgs bosons. So I will talk about neutral ones today. So at tree level, we have two parameters, but the mass of the little eight is below the mass of the Z. So the Suzy particles come and save us with loop corrections and can make the mass below 133, something like 126, let's say. And currently, we are using the MHMAX scenario. And I will like to talk at the end a little bit about that and interaction with the theory in the MSSM searches, because currently there is no good communication. I mean, we can provide our inputs so that other models can also be looked at, but I will refer to that. So at large tan beta, we have enhancement in the cross section and in the branching ratio. Two of the three Higgses are degenerate, so it's a really fun analysis, and it has to be done. So experimental challenges, tau identification. So what we do in CMS is called the combinatorial tau reconstruction, because tau, when it decays hadronically, it will go or to a charged pion or to three charged pions that form an A1 meson, or one pion and a pi zero that can give you a rho meson, and you can have also charged pion and two pi zeros that can give you an A1 meson. So what we do in CMS, we have what we call the particle flow reconstruction, which combines all information from detectors to give you a unique particle event description. And we use those particles and we build combinations and we go and build the decay modes. In the case of pi zeros, it's a little bit complicated because we have a huge tracker in CMS, which means we can reconstruct very well the momentum, but we have material effects and very often photons from pi zero convert, so we use a strip to pick up the energy that is radiated. So when you use all those approaches, what you gain is that you are reconstructing the tau energy only by using the particles that form the decay mode, instead of using cones, for example, as it was done in Tevatron. And that helps you a lot because you're not sensitive to pileup when you reconstruct the tau energy. And also you use the tracker and the ECAL that both work very, very well in CMS. So when you do it for the same efficiency with respect to traditional cone-based approach, you get about factor of 3 less background. And this one made zeta tau tau and higgs tau tau possible even in the first year of data taking.
What's the PT threshold?
So the system, the meson that you reconstruct, we use 20 GeV for our analysis. I know that many people would like us to go lower for that. It's very hard because if it's not collimated, then it can be a fluctuation of a low PT jet. So the background increases very rapidly below 20 GeV. So the second challenge is to reconstruct the mass, to separate Z from Higgs. So the problem here is the following, that if you take the semi-leptonic di-tau decay, one tau decaying leptonically and the other hadronically, you have 7 unknown variables. And if you use the fact that you know the tau mass in the two legs, so that becomes 5. And then you can use the missing transverse energy, and that can become 3. But then you have nothing else. So you need to find a way to get the mass when we have 3 unknown coefficients. And what you do is you use probability. So you use expected matrix element for the decays of the taus, expected angles, and you do a likelihood fit for each event, and you minimize this likelihood and you get the best value of the mass. This methodology is used in both Atlas and CMS with different algorithms. And the good thing is that compared to the previous collinear approximation approach that we were supposed to use, this one has a valid solution in every event. And as you see, the performance is really spectacular. So you can really separate those two guys. So baseline event selection, how we pick the di-tau candidates, I won't go in detail on this, but we're using muon plus hadronic tau, electron plus hadronic tau, electron plus muon, double hadronic in the standard model, and di-muon. We usually trigger those events with 2 objects, or 3 in the case of the double hadronic plus a jet, and the thresholds are a little bit above the trigger thresholds. So you need to apply some cuts to reject W plus jets. So W plus jets, you have W decaying to a lepton and a neutrino and a jet that it is faking a tau. So what you do is you form the transverse mass of the lepton plus the missing transverse energy. You see how well we reconstruct the missing ET in events with large pileup. And you apply a cut to reduce this background. And in the case of the electron plus muon, you have TT bar. You have electron muon, so you have a lot of TT bar. So we're using a similar variable, which we project the momenta of the 2 leptons in the bisector axis. We also project the missing ET. This is a zeta axis. And then we require that the projection in this axis of the leptons plus the missing ET minus only the visible product is above minus 20. So you see that zeta tau tau and Higgs is above, and TT bar and W is below. So those two variables reject the main backgrounds. And then we estimate the backgrounds that are left. And as Jamin said, we are using this embedding technique that has been proven extremely useful. So what we do is, for example, you have a VBF event. You want to estimate the probability of Z to have a VBF signature. This can be fake dijet, or it can be electroweak production. And you need to be inclusive. You just need the number of events. So what you do is you go to dimuon events. You pick them. You have your jets or whatever you have. And then you replace the muons with taus. You decay the taus using Monte Carlo. You mix everything together. And you have your new event that has your jets from data and your taus simulated with tau-ola that works pretty well. For QCD background, we use same sign events. So usually if you have same sign events, you estimate the other backgrounds, you subtract them, and what is left is QCD. So then you extrapolate it from the same sign to the opposite sign region. And for the W, you go to the high transverse mass, you count the events, and you extrapolate to the low transverse mass, because you know very well the shape of the W shape. Then you want to see if you can reconstruct this using all those extremely complicated techniques. So this is what we get after this basic selection. This is muon plus tau, electron plus muon, and dimuon. So what you see is that the thing works more or less very nicely. And the resolution that we get from this mass reconstruction is of the order of 12 to 20%. The more neutrinos you have, the larger it is, the less neutrino, the narrower it is. So what you can see is that the electron plus tau has some, compared to the muon plus tau, has some Z2EE background, this blue, because you have electron looks too much like a tau in the detector in some cases. So it's challenging to remove all of it. So how we search for the standard model Higgs? For the main, those four decay modes, we have VBF, which is two jets above 30 GeV, eta less than 4.7. They need to be to have a delta eta of 3.5 and a mass above 500. And we do a jet veto in the gap between the jets and the tau product. Then for events that don't pass this category, we look at one jet. So we require at least one jet above 30 GeV. And we have a zero jet category that has all other events, has negligible signal contamination, and it's mainly used for calibration. So you fit together this category with the others, and this category can help you constrain your tau ID, your Z cross section, and your backgrounds. So for the tau-tau hadronic, we have loser cuts because we expect less events. So we have two jets, but with delta eta 2.5 and MJJ above 250. And we also require that the PT of the die-tau system is above 110 GeV to reduce multi-jet background. So if you have an event with four jets and two of them fake the taus, it's possible that the topology that you will pick will have two other jets that are back-to-back and will give you a VBF signature. And there is one jet that you require, just one jet with PT above 140. Finally, associated production, ZH analysis, we look for two leptons from Z plus two taus in all those final states. And the WH, which is pretty interesting, what we do is we require two same sign leptons plus hadronic tau. So the problem here is that you have, if you're going to WH and H, for example, going to muon and hadronic tau, you can have a background which is Z plus jets. So you can have two leptons plus one jet faking the tau. And this background is huge. So what we do is we require that the two leptons are same sign. We kill half of the events or something like that. But the, you kill all Z plus jets background.
Sorry, so in the Z plus Higgs channel, you require two taus associated with the Z.
Two leptons from Z, electrons from muon. So those are, again, 20 GeV.
Even those,
if you... Yes, you could go a little bit lower, but you have, as you will see, you have large background from Z plus Z still. You know, the problem is that if you, when you go to associate production, you have the boson, but then the diboson production is much larger than the Higgs, and also Z plus Z is the non-prompt, that is what is QCD in the inclusive. It's the same story, unfortunately. So I will start with the less important categories. This is a Higgs plus zero jet, which is used for calibration. And what you can see from here is that the calibration works. So you have excellent agreement between data and Monte Carlo. You cannot even see the signal because it's not plotted, but it's totally negligible. It's 100 times less than any systematic that you have. Then we go to one jet that we use low tau PT and high tau PT. So we have muon plus tau, electron plus muon, and dimuon. So this is low PT. Now, and then I will show you the high PT. So this is one of our most dominant categories. And what is really interesting is how this dimion channel changes. If you require low PT for the muons, you get some Z to tau tau, and then Z to mu mu. But when you require high PT, you get only Z mu mu, because Z to tau tau is suppressed due to the low, softer leptons. So the high PT. There is a signal here that it's plotted, and it's 1 times the standard model. And you can tell me that, wait, that is totally impossible that this category is useful. But there are 100 Higgs events here. And let me clarify this. You probably have noticed it in the paper if you read the conference note. But here we plot dn over dm. So to find the number of events, you have to multiply by the bin size. We do it because we use variable binning. So this is 10 GeV here. So if you have in this bin, it's 50 times 10, 500 background events, and something like 40 or 30 signal events, which means that this category can help you. It's like in the gamma-gamma. When you see it, the signal is not really visible, but there are a lot of events there, and it gives you very high sensitivity. What is interesting, and I want to mention it now because we will come up back later, is the fact that you see some excess here for the electron plus tau, which is not even the most sensitive category, and it's a fluctuation of 1.5 sigma that can happen. And this shows in our limits, so I want you to pay attention to this. Electron plus muon, good agreement, and dimuon. And all the money comes, of course, from the VBF. So, muon plus tau, which is the most sensitive channel, what you can see is good agreement in the high bins. And this bin here, this is 20 GeV. So you expect 20 events, and you see something 28. So there is a slight excess on that bin. Electron plus tau doesn't show anything. Electron plus muon shows some events a little bit higher. And dimuon doesn't show anything. So if you count all of the events, which is not the representative way to show it, because the only 3 bins or 2 bins contribute, you see that you have about 1 sigma more events than what you expect in the muon plus tau. But as you can see with the statistic, you cannot say that you see signal with such. It's exactly what Jamin said. 1 sigma here, 1 sigma there, and then you put them together and you get something. The double hadronic, VBF, very large errors. You see that we don't seem to observe anything. And the 1Z category here, what is very nice is look how beautiful is the mass resolution, because you have only 2 neutrinos in the final state. So it's very nice. And small excess in some of the bins. So VBF 61 plus minus 10 within 1 sigma, and everything is in the whole counts are within expected. Associated production. So this is the WH analysis, and this is a ZH. What we observe is we observe a slight excess on the ZH, which is a little bit above 1 sigma. But what you can see is that the expected Higgs is very, very small here. So it's about, this is about 5 times less. You can fit 5 times the signal on this bin. So those are just fluctuations of the background. Shows you that we're not sensitive yet to do this analysis. Yes, that is, there has been some discussion about this. But as you know, this is, here it's just events. It's not DNDM. So you have 2 and 3, and all those are consistent with Poisson fluctuations. Excuse me? Well, yes, but even combined them is consistent with Poisson fluctuation. So, I mean, we can discuss about it in 2-3 years after we start retaking data. So, relevant theoretical systematics. This analysis is dominated by the backgrounds that have large fluctuation, but our dominant theoretical systematic is what is the gluon fusion uncertainty in events that pass the VBF selection, which means two jets with delta eta, NZJ, and ZV2. And currently, a number that we use is 30% for this contribution. And the second largest one is, of course, what is the gluon fusion in the one jet category? And currently, we use 10%. But both of them have relatively small effect in the analysis. So the first one, we treat it because we have a purity of the order of 80% in the VBF category, very high purity. So it is very small. But other analyses that don't have such large purities would benefit by a better number for this. So this was done some time ago, and it was used by taking the FEHI Pro program and varying the factorization and normalization scales and seeing what you get. You mean for
the one jet?
No, depends on the PT of the jet, right? So for 150 GeV, it was 35%. For 30 GeV, it was about 10%.
We have atmospheric 25 GeV, 30 GeV, I don't think we're changing that much.
And you get 30%.
We get about
30%. So does Frank...
yeah, I think it's larger than 10. It should be at least 100%.
Okay, that is a good feedback, actually. The good thing is that since those affect only the signal, have very small effect in the sensitivity. But
so do you have a table of the actual central values of how much contamination there is
in the past that we have published now for HCP, we have the total signal efficiency for each contribution in each category. So, for example, you can see that you can see how much is the contamination of each one of those. So, for
example,
then you multiply with the inclusive cross.
Overall acceptance.
So those numbers, yeah, we can discuss. Those numbers were the efficiency, so you just multiply by the cross-section to get...
But then you get too few events if you just do that.
You need also the luminosity. We will discuss it. No, no, it's only for the uncertainty. So, expected sensitivity. So what you can see is that, which you don't expect in the beginning, for excluding the Higgs, the 1Z and the VBF have very similar sensitivity. And the reason is that the 1Z has much more events and also good resolution, and the VBF has more statistics, but it's much purer. And if you look at the final states, what you see is that all the job is done by the muon plus tau. The muon plus tau dominates all the limit. That's why I said before that when you want to translate those in the mass spectra, you have to look at the muon plus tau of VBF and 1Z.
Can you explain why that black tau has that dip and rise?
Yes. So it has to do with the PT cut, I think. It has to do with the PT cut that it changes the distribution. Plus, plus we have bin-by-bin uncertainties for those plots. So every bin, because we have very low statistic, has its own uncertainty. And based on the contamination, those give you some effects. But it's very, very low sensitivity. We expected much more from that. So what we have? What we have is... we expect him to exclude this Higgs-like particle with cross-section of 1 times the standard model at 125 GeV, and we seem to be excluding something that is 1.6 times the standard model. So on the right, you can see what if I put also signal inside. I inject standard model signal, and you see that if you had standard model signal, this would be 1.5, and the observed is 1.6. What is important that you must not forget is the bands. So these two plots show you that the data that you have are consistent for both signal and signal plus background hypothesis. So you cannot say anything yet. And if I want to go a little bit deeper, this is what you get from the gluon fusion plus VBF, and this is what you get from associated production. So what you see is that you have some excess at low mass, and this excess is this guy that I showed you before, those events here, which they are not very consistent with the signal. You know you have something coming on VBF, and we are excited for it. We are waiting for something to appear on VBF. And on the VH, we have some excess on the ZH. So in principle, one going down, one going up, and you get the previous one that is almost, let's say, flat. But the VH doesn't have really enough sensitivity. So that's what I'm saying, that a little bit from here, a little bit from there, you cannot tell. And that happens when you try to do the cross-section and you look at the compatibility with the standard model. So 1Z, VBF, VH, each final state separately, 70 VATV data and combined, and you can see that everything gives you consistency with 1 and almost with 0. Within 1.3 sigma, you're consistent with both. And the funny thing is actually that the signal strength is exactly the same as Atlas is, with a little bit smaller uncertainty, that's true. I have a slide for you, okay? That's the next slide.
By the way, can you go back to the...
Yes. Yes.
So then the 2 sigma would be 1.7. You're saying you excluded 1.6.
Something about that, yeah. 1.6 something. The number is something, 1.60 something. So those are rounded numbers. So the real numbers are in the documentation. But I mean, you know, if you have something that is 0.7, the uncertainty is almost, you know, 100%. Right. So you cannot trust more significant digits.
Can I ask one other question, which is, maybe you're going to show this, but when CMS shows the summary plot of all the channels, the plot, the tau tau result on that summary plot is not this one.
So we can look at that. I don't have it in the, I don't have the summary. I think that the reason is that here this includes the VH to tau tau, but maybe in the other plot there are two separate things. We have to check. I will look at the I will look at it and let you know what's going on. So before I go to Ian's question, so we also do. Which numbers? These three, or you need those numbers? Yes, if you need them, you ask them and you get them. Okay. We will let the subgroup know. It happens many times. When we publish the first MSSM results, theorists asked for numbers, they got the numbers. That's how it happens. Yes, I don't know about that. Okay, so we also try to disentangle the production mechanism. So here you can see only the production part of gluon fusion plus TT bar H, and here vector boson fusion and associated production. You can see that the tau tau, even with so small statistics, has a comparable vector boson fusion uncertainty with the others. For example, WW, which is the best we have for those measurements here. And it's better than gamma-gamma, I would say. And of course, in the fermion, you have a very large uncertainty. So it's going to be promising, and I hope we see some signal, some more signal, even with this last chunk of data. So, your question. What changed since IDSHIP? We have new Mycenaete reconstruction to account for the pileup, and that gives much better mass resolution. We have higher background rejection, so there is tighter reoptimization of the cuts that have been left there for 2 years. For example, the transverse mass was 40 and it became 20. And a big change is the VBF. So the VBF, we ask, many people asked for a common cut-based approach before it was an MVA. And people that went and found the cut-based approach that gives you almost the same sensitivity as the MVA. And then if you go and see what VBF events we had before and what VBF events we have now, you will see the red events are all the events that we had before. And now we only pick events on this quadrant. So you can see that the correlation of the sample is pretty small. So in principle, the events that we got after reoptimizing the VBF were not all of them that we had before. Most of them we didn't have before. So there has been a big interchange of events here. And one other important is better jet energy calibration in the forward region. I have that also. I have. Yes, so I mean, this is if you go to a specific data set, right? So what you can see is that 71 of the IDSHIP events are not now in my sample. Okay. And 30 of them are. Okay. And what you can see is that 17% of the new events were not in the IDSHIP sample. Yes, because, so the point is the sensitivity is the same, but the cut-based approach, as you can see from here, reduces the data so the purity is higher.
The Venn diagrams are just regarding the original 4.9.
Yes, on exactly the same sample, yes. Yes, but it's not only that, because if we did the old analysis in the new data, we would have much more of the new events also. It's just a different working point.
So the blue oval is really 4 times smaller than the red oval.
Yeah, from what you can see from here.
So
this is only the old event. Yes, but if I make the same plot, if I do this old analysis in the new data and make the same plot, you would see exactly the same picture. Yes, and this was done while the data were blinded. We didn't pick, I want that guy, I got that guy, I got that guy. So before I move on, actually, to answer the other question, so here is the limit that you get if you do the new analysis on the IDSHIP data with better Mycenaete, new jet energy corrections, and new VBF. So you see that the change is one sigma, it's nothing. It's both in the green band. So it's not, I mean, this is. No, that's a camera.
If you observe, basically, IDSHIP, you have one sigma axis, and you opt down, you find that the convex axis is you have same sensitivity as the NDN axis. I bet you will not change it to convex axis.
I can tell you that the people that were doing the analysis wanted to exclude it. They did their word to see signal. Yes, it's one sigma. Yes, yes. Yes, but yeah. It's one and one. But it's very small. I mean, it's very small. 30% probability. It's very, very small. Okay, going back. I have seen much worse, and I can show you next week. I will show you next week the MZ1 over MZ2 in the ZZ24 leptons, which is much worse than that. So, okay. No, because I only showed the tau tau here, so I guess Jim will show it next week, but we can discuss in the meanwhile if you want. Okay, MSSM, this is actually one of my favorite analyses because it was the first analysis that had the name Higgs that made the Tevatron limits obsolete with only 36 inverse picobars of data. And we use now the full MSSM tau tau search with B tagging and no B tagging. So this is a number of the bidgets after inclusive data selection. So you can see that we fully understand the bidgets because we have tuned them with TT-bar events from data. So we have two categories. Events with a B-tag jet with 20 GV and less than two jets above 30. So this second requirement is to kill TT-bar background, because usually what we see is that we miss one of the two B-jets from the BBA production, while TT-bar always has more than one jet. So this gives you much higher S over B compared to TT-bar. And then we have the inclusive category, the exclusive category that has events with no B-tagged jets, which is a gluon fusion search. And if I go and plot them here, I was hoping for something at 200 to appear and never appeared. So this is muon plus tau, B-tagged, electron plus tau, electron plus muon, and dimuon. And what you can see actually from the count, and you can see it also from here, is that we observe a small deficit of the order of 1.5 sigma in the data. So not very exciting. And the other category shows you essentially the same. So you can see how well we model the tails, and nothing seems to appear. And actually, when we did the first search, we were at unbeta 30, and then we said we will see it at 20, then we will see it at 10. And now you will see we are at 5, and we haven't seen it yet, but it will come. One thing that is very important here, and this is how we do the fit. So the problem is that now we have good resolution in the DiTau system, and the degeneracy of the three Higgses is very important, and we cannot neglect it anymore, especially at low tangent beta. So what we do is, for each point in the MA tangent beta plane, we create shapes for each of the three bosons at the mass that they should be based on the MH max scenario and the inputs that we have, and we merge those shapes to one shape that we fit as signal. Now, if you don't do that and you assume that they are exactly the same mass, you overestimate your sensitivity. And that was significant. So the problem is that while we do that, and we do it correctly, and we get the correct answer, the problem is that then it's very difficult to communicate the results to the theorists if you want to exclude other benchmark scenarios. Because if the masses are different, then you cannot say that they are one or two. And that's, of course, you can do it at higher MA. But at low MA, this is one issue that needs to be discussed. We need to find a way to propagate semi-model independent results if people want to play with those cross-sections. If not, or it can be done the other way around, you give us new benchmark scenarios and we run the fit. This is something that there is discussion in the experiment on how we can proceed, because in Morionde, we want to get a paper out and give all of those cross-sections to people to do more work on that. So the expected sensitivity in the MA tangent beta plane, so you can see that the non-B tag is still a little bit better because of much more events. And as usual, muon plus tau is dominating all the job here. And the expectation is tangent beta 5 at about 150. So B-tagging is, so here is B-tagging, no B-tagging, here is both combined per channel. Exactly. We stopped. Yes. Actually, there was not a problem about the fact that it was a tangent beta 30, because it was a model-independent cross-section. But this didn't take into account the degeneracy. So it was hard to combine. At that point, we didn't have a problem, because we were at very high tangent beta. We were in different regime. But the problem is that if we make the same plot for BBH and gluon fusion, you cannot combine them and get the same answer because the degeneracy will make the result worse from what you can predict. Yes, that is also the case.
And so, in some way, you will have a different. You can't really take out.
Yes.
Square
I have one slide also to discuss this. In two or three slides, I will discuss this because I have a proposal for that to solve this problem. So, this is what we observe. This is the expected limit, and this is the observed limit. So you can see that below 200, we are stuck in tangent beta 5. And my best guess is tangent beta 4 and 400. That's where I want it. I don't know if we get it, but that's where I would like to have it. So, and there is a small deficit from the B-tagged category of the order of between 1 and 2 sigma, which is very small. And this is the best MSSM result we have up to now. So, in going back now to this, so one thing that we have to discuss is what's the best way to provide the results. One thing that we can do is we can do what we do for the standard model to have a two-dimensional contour of the gluon fusion cross-section versus BBA cross-section for its mass hypothesis. And we could provide the number and the error on these two numbers for all masses that we look. This would be valid in high tangent beta, but at low tangent beta, low MA, the degeneracy would not make it so valid unless somebody rescales the result somehow. If somebody else has any other ideas on how they would like to get the result on Moriant, we can let us know and we can propagate it to the experiment. So I'm done. So we have updated the Higgs to tau tau with 17 inverse femtobands for HCP. We reached 1 times standard model sensitivity. And the data is compatible with both S plus B and B hypothesis for now. If we assume a 125 GeV Higgs boson, the signal strength is 0.7 plus minus 0.5. And the MSSM now is a tangent beta 5 at low mass. And we need to do this thing. So that's it. Yes, so what we do now is, since we have the input at each point of tangent beta, at each point we use the specific kinematics of each point. So we go to one point in the grid, we scale one cross-section like this, the other cross-section like expected, and all the masses as expected. The only thing we don't do yet is the width. But the width is small compared to the resolution. So we don't take into account the width, the fact that the width changes. So then if you have the specific kinematics at some point, you can then fit your limit as a function of tangent beta and give the tangent beta value where you exclude the Higgs. So currently, all uncertainties, all cross-section, and all masses at each point are taken into account. If you gave us, for example, another input file, such as the one that we have for MHMAX, we can do the same thing for another benchmark scenario very easily that way. Exactly. You can, exactly. This implies that our fit takes care of everything and doesn't have model independence. The only way to have model independence is, as I see it, is to look only in regions where the degeneracy doesn't matter and do a two-dimensional fit of BBH versus GGH and give the contour for its mass hypothesis. Then you have the fit at its mass and you can predict whatever, I think. I think that this is the best the best way to present it in a model independent way.
Yeah, it seems that if you are model independent, that means you cannot build in too much KMS.
Exactly. So what I can say is, what is the, I can decouple them and I can say, what is the gluon fusion and the BBH? If it was only gluon fusion, one is zero, the other is one, or we can measure the cross-section of its axis independently. That's the only thing that we can do that is model independent. And we want to do that because it's important.
Within gluon fusion.
BBH. But for, we don't. Yes. Yes, but the point with that is that within gluon fusion, the search is pretty model independent. We just require two taus. Naively, I cannot see of something that would make my observation different within gluon fusion, except that the cross section would change. So, except the fact that the cross section will change, I don't see what else would, in principle, change. So maybe the number of jets is different. I don't think it is considered an issue right now. So if, though, there is, if, for example, these jets less than two would make a difference, that would be very interesting for us to know, to tune the cuts in a more model-independent way. Because the only cut that we have is number of jets above 30 less than two. So if the efficiency, if other effects come into account, changes by 20%, that will have a big impact in our results, and we would like to know that. But if it's much smaller, then it shouldn't matter. Yes? So this is also something very important and very hard to do, because again, it depends on all the parameters. So we really haven't done it, but we have seen talks from many people that have shown that there is a new band. But again, it depends too much on the scenario, I think. No, no, I mean, what one should do here is take the inputs for the standard model Higgs search and use the expected cross-sections that you expect for the little h in the MSSM for those particles and see what your limit becomes if you exclude the little h instead of the a at higher mass, for example. So it's a new complicated fit that has to be done, but it's very model, very SUSY parameter dependent, I think. So you mean to inject it in the and see what happens? So what I think is that if you assume that there is a signal, then you, in the MH max, you get a band that goes to tangent beta 4 at high MA, but